Our first question is from Stefan, who asks, "You have said that to obtain freedom, we must want it more than anything else. What about those of us who do not have that intensity of desire?"
It is a good question, because it is a seeming paradox that you are asked to give your total being for something, and you don't know what it is, and you can't define exactly how to get it, and you read about it, and you still know that the reading of it is not the truth of it. So endlessly the paradox surrounds you, and the world continues to pull at you. If I might just say a few things about historically the way this problem has been resolved. In the early days of man's search for his own self, it was very important that they have a teacher. And it was through looking in the face of the teacher that they saw reflected, not words, but being, alive, aware, totally accepting being every day. And so this kept the student in a wonder of what was possible. And so every day the student would look and say, "Oh, I remember, yes, I want, I know it can happen." You see, part of your problem, my friend, is you're not sure. You're not sure, one, what it is you seek, and two, you're not sure that you're really seeking in the proper way. The one thing I see in your faces again and again as you sit before me is, am I doing the right thing? Someone can be absolutely filled with the perfect path for their own understanding and sit before me and I see confusion. In spite of the fact that so much has been understood, so much has been revealed, but the doubt continues. Is it right? Could I be doing something better? Am I insufficient? So the teacher stood, or sat, or walked, or ate, or laughed, or read, or did whatever was necessary in a daily life, not speaking, not prattling, not speaking, preaching, but being. And in the presence of that being, you remember. In the way he or she walked, in the way he or she looked and spoke and moved. All right. Ever present, reminding you. Well, those days for most of you have gone, because there are so many more of you on the earth plane, for one thing. And in proportion to the number of you that are here, the number of truly inspired ones who could inspire you are negligible. And then, please excuse this one, but the fact remains that your lives are moving so quickly that the Buddha himself could be sitting here and you would miss it, because you're going so fast. You see, life has changed. And in the very boredom of the way life used to be, there was a hope. For example, you did not have great ambitions in the old days. You were born into a certain caste. You stayed there. You knew what you had to do. You didn't think about it. It was accepted. You couldn't go above your station. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do that. Through all of this paraphernalia, you were completely bored. And in that boredom arose this yearning. And then the seeking. And then the finding. All right. My friends, you have fixed it so that that is no longer possible. You know what you... How many of you begin your life with the job that you end your life with? How many of you begin with the same mate that you end your life with? How many... I mean, it's just constant. You change your homes, you stay and change your cars, you change your mates, you change your friends, you change your locations, your towns, your on and on, your countries, it goes on and on. When things become boring, drop it. There's something else. And then, of course, if all else fails, just turn your hand and this wonderful universal mandala comes on in a box here and you can sit for the rest of your life and watch the world go by. And you need never worry about being bored, because there's always something happening on that wonderful thing. You have gone to a great deal of trouble as a world to accelerate to such an extent that you don't have time to be bored. And as much as you would like, I feel that boredom is a great help. And this is why I say to you, those of you who might be bored, those of you who might be despondent, those of you who might be in a downswing in the cycle of life, inner and outer. The only answer that I can give you is this, my friend. To be with and to read of and to remember as much as you can those things and be with those people that you know will reflect for you what it is that you seek. It isn't a matter of being superior, it's a matter of wanting to remember. And if you can be in the presence of someone who has truth in a more clariform than you do, then listen. And remember, and remember. And instead of reaching for the murder mystery, reach for something that might help you remember. It's all a matter of trying to remember. And then the hardest thing of all, which is to believe the hardest thing of all, which is that if you will just keep going within, within, within. Boring. Do you think it's exciting to sit and contemplate your navel for 5 hours a day? Do you think anybody really thinks that? No, especially if you know enough to know that all the fantasies that go before your mind are nothing. The great gods and goddesses appear and dance and dissolve. So what? You're still the same. You get up off your chair and you feel, oh, how wonderful, and you stub your toe and you fall down and you start swearing and you're back where you began. It's all a matter of knowing. 5 hours of boring sitting, day after day after day after day. So what? So what? You see, the horrible paradox is you're going to have to try it. You're going to have to keep trying. You're going to have to keep saying, all right, I'm going to keep trying. And you're going to have to push at it. My friends, it isn't going to flow. If you were in a state where meditating and contemplation and walking in awareness and the positive presence was automatic, you wouldn't be sitting here. My only job is to hold up the mirror and say, remember, remember this, please remember. That's all I have to say. Remember and go within. That's all. The other thing I suggest that you do is to watch carefully what's really happening in your life, really. Not what you're dreaming about. Not what you're hoping for, but what is the reality of this very moment. And if you watch this moment very carefully, you will begin to understand the play that you have contrived. You will begin to see. You will begin to face reality. You understand. Until you face the reality of this life, you cannot begin to understand the vastness that transcends this reality. You have to begin where you are. We cannot all go to Pluto and Neptune and look here. We have to stay right here. That means right here in your life, however it is conditioning you, right here. And if you hold your awareness so powerfully right here, you will see the things that you thought were going to give you pleasure are not going to give you pleasure. It is the hope of future pleasure that keeps you alert and alive to pleasure. Watch me and test me. Find out if I'm speaking truth. It is the dream of desire. It is the future desire that holds you, not what's happening right now. Because if you are right here, right now, and not moving out of this instant for any time at all, you're going to see the dreams that you have contrived and then chase after. And then another dream, and then we chase. And then another dream. But if you stay right here, absolutely poised right here, you are going to start to feel something. Christianity would call it the presence. All right, call it any name, I don't care. But if you stay in this moment and are determined to stay right here, you're going to start to feel it because it's here. That which you seek is here. Totally, completely, and abundantly present. And it could not be anywhere else. If it is not here, then don't search for it. It isn't worth finding. If it isn't your true nature, if it isn't your original face, if it isn't your original source, it is not worth finding, and don't search for it at all. But you cannot find it in any moment but this one. And this is why I keep saying, if you would only believe me enough to hold right in this instant, and to not project mind into future, not even next moment, but right here, you would feel it, because it is here. You have forgotten to feel it. They say, you're crazy. If I had all that going on in me, I would know it. I would feel it. And I say, but it isn't true. But it isn't true. And the way I know it not to be true is that I see it totally within each one of you. That is all I see in you. And yet you sit before me day after day and I hear the pain and the suffering and the anxiety and I think it's there, but they feel it not. And there's only one trick, and you have played it on yourself, and it is this. If you keep busy enough, you will never find it. Your whole world is based on progress. You are not going to make progress in finding your true self. That is as foolish a statement as you could possibly make. I'm going to progress in finding myself. Those are not words that are applicable. There's only one thing that you can say, which is, I'm going to be silent enough so that I can re-know myself. If you were going to become a medical doctor, and you would know the years and years of study, you would only search for that in comparison with what you know of the medical profession from those who have achieved that status, correct? And this is the same. You have to go to the source of those who have achieved that which you are seeking. And you have to fill yourself with their words. You have to fill yourself with their reality. And then you have to take it quietly into your own presence and look for it. And just sit there until it shows its face. And it will. I cannot answer any other way, my friend. It is the eternal paradox. Because you see, it's a paradox to begin with. You're seeking what you already are. You want to know what you already have. You want to become what you already are. All paradox. Be aware of this. Anxiety is one of the ego's main devices to move you out of the moment. There is nothing to be anxious about. Ever. 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 Does that answer for you? A paradox, I am sorry. Other questions?
We have another one. You have said that ego projects, but the divine extends. Would you clarify the term extension? What is extending?
I'm not sure I can answer that, but I will do my best. All right. Now, here I must state before I even begin that what I am telling you is a lie, that the words I am using are empty. This is something I cannot talk about. It is something that has no word, no form, and no syntax. I cannot speak of it. So I, with that as my premise, I will try to speak of what cannot be said. Extension of divine being is that which you become aware of when the ego and the personality no longer fill your consciousness. And at that moment, when ego no longer fills you, but something other now has moved forward from its receded position to the forefront and now takes over your awareness. You become very aware of something, and it is something like the following. To be seated here in this chair in a state of extension means that one can move to the height of that mountain and caress and be a part of and an alive, knowing part of the rock formations that fall down its side. to move in a westerly direction and to be able to participate in the ebb and flow of the sea as it caresses the shore of the land to the west, to move to the high vault of heaven and move with surety and freedom, and to see every face as your face, every being as your own being, and every life as the one life. It is to sit in the middle of an endless circle and be the middle of the circle and at the same time the periphery of the circle. It is to be in all places and yet very much here. It is to be in a state of dynamic, creative, endlessly compassionate awareness. And it is to move with the power of the moment without questioning where you are to move and what you are to do. It is to move with a power within and around and about you. It is to have no thought, but to have only action. And it is to have action from center and not from periphery. And I've spoken words that make no sense, perhaps, to you. Extension is a state of divine awareness that you have to experience to understand. And I am very sorry, but my words cannot carry you. And my words cannot But it is to know the absolute rightness of all things. Of all things. And that is the best that I can do.
I think you said one time that when we asked whether you were progressing on your level of awareness, that you were not progressing, but you were extending.
Progressing means getting better and better, purer and purer. Extending means embracing more and more of what you already know you are. It's as though the arms of the lover begin very tightly, and then they expand and expand and expand more and more. All the time, the lover being aware that this is a process. It's an awakened process. Extending is an awakened state of knowingness that the vastness is so much more than one is all at that moment embracing. And so the great joy is continuing to embrace ever and more, ever more eddies, ever more worlds, ever more vortexes of its own being. The difference is, I know what the divine, I know what it is that I'm embracing, and I know the wonder of the movement, and know that it will continue to expand, all right? I'm sorry about the difficulty of the words. But I know what it is already. It isn't that I have to awaken to anything new, it's simply to open my being to more and ever increasing moreness of the oneness. When you see the oneness once, you know. Everything else you ever see will be oneness. It isn't going to be oneness and then two-ness and then three-ness. It's going to be oneness. So once you see oneness, it's only a matter of opening up the being, ever increasing, ever expanding, ever extending to vaster and vaster compassion and love.
Pretty big idea. I had a vision of a bubble when you were talking. The power, it's inside the bubble. You know that power. And as that power expands and expands, the bubble gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yes, thank you. It is a knowing. What I'm trying to say is really the difference between extending and all other states is the knowingness of it. Have I made that clear? It is a knowing of what you already are. Therefore, there is a wondrous delight and joy, and this is badly going. Let's move to something else.
What are you?
Sir.
In your inner struggles, I was able to see something, and that is that reality, and I'm greatly overjoyed by it, that reality is not limited to man's languages. And, thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
That is a source of great encouragement to you to know that.
Thank you. Thank you. It is very difficult. So.
Well, why don't we move along now and talk about formlessness?
Now that I can say a little more about. I don't know if you'll understand anymore, but I will do my best. The question arises because of a woman's call who wanted to know more about formlessness. Somehow, in the hearing of a tape on formlessness, she glimmered, deeply glimmered, what it was, or what it was not, and asked for a little more. Now, all that she is doing, please be clear, all that she is doing is saying, hold up the mirror for me, please. Just please, hold it up once again. So I might have another chance at it. One more moment. Don't you see? That's what a real teacher has to do. The reason that you would come back and back and back to hear someone is not to hear anything new, because if I have said anything new to you in the last 3 years, then we have failed. If you have listened very carefully, I hope that I have been utterly boring and said the same thing until you are wondering why you bother to come. I am never going to say anything different than I'm saying right now, which is that you can find who you are because you are that, and the only way to do it is to be still and push the power within and find it. That is all I will ever say. I began with it and I will end with it, because there isn't anything else to say. But now to say things other, the formlessness of things is the frightening part of what the game is that you've constructed. You are very familiar with and feel very secure with form, and let me tell you why. Because you have a hope of manipulating form. I hope I don't offend you, but it is true. You have a hope of manipulating form and thereby getting what you want, however exalted. But when we move into the realm of the formless, you do not have that assurance anymore. You do not have the assurance that what is formless is going to listen to you and be manipulated by your ego. And therefore, anything that is formless that comes into your life carries with it fear. Because the one thing that a true spiritual experience carries with it is the knowledge that you did nothing to bring it about. And there is nothing that you could do to bring it about again, and you are helpless in the hands of what you hope to be a compassionate power. I'm speaking of a true spiritual experience. Therefore, when you speak of the formless, you become afraid. How do you control the formless? What is the one thing that has the least form in your universe as you know it? I would say it would be the air and the wind and the power in the winds. Can you do anything about those things? If the power of the wind decides to move across your land, can you do anything to stop it? So as a symbol, which the world is symbolic, of moving currents of air through space can become very frightening, because you can do nothing. And so it is, when you finally move into the realm of the formless, you become afraid because you have lost your power base, and you have lost your power base. And be grateful that you've lost your power base. Because when you are utterly hopeless, utterly finished, utterly without power to do anything, then your ego is at the lowest ebb that it can come to, and at that moment all things are possible. Until that time, ego still has power. I love failures. I love failures. And I wish that you would start to love failures. You see, you love the wrong thing. You love success. Very, very successful people make very, very poor seekers of God. So, I would wish for all of you some degree of failure. And in that moment of failure, if you could start to laugh just a little. Now, we don't want to go overboard and be too happy, but if you could just get a little bit of happiness about your failure so that you would know clearly within yourself that you are helpless, then you will begin the wondrous process that I call letting it go. Just letting it go. Just letting it go. But if you're extremely successful, how can you let go? Do you understand? It is only when you have either become so successful that you've turned your back on it, that's one alternative, or two, tried so often and keep failing, that's another alternative. But either way, when you come to that point where you no longer are successful, or no longer wish for success, whichever way you might approach it, then there is a chance. Man's failures are God's opportunity, believe me. Correctly used, they're wonderful. But the problem is, the minute you fail, you have to get up and start again and strive and do better. Oh, I'm going to do better. I'm going to do better. Thereby creating a great deal of power in your ego nature. All I say is, if you could only remember that what you are seeking has nothing to do with manipulating form, but has everything to do with experiencing the formless, you're going to start letting go. A great criteria for you to hang on to is this. If it can change in any way, it is not the real. In any way, it is not the real. And if you can keep yourself aware of that over and over and yet again, then you're going to let go a lot of things. I don't mean you have to get them out of your life. I just mean quit being so attached to them. Quit thinking about them and worrying about them and spending your time rumorating and wondering and fiddling and fussing and fuming and talking and concerning and... Oh. You know, it's wonderful to be a failure, because if you're a failure, you've got nothing to do. And people who have very little to do oftentimes fall into God's lap. People who are very busy rarely have time. They go right by it every day, right by God's lap, and they forget it. They don't even see it, as if it's not there. I repeat, the Buddha could be sitting right by the roadside, and you could go by on your horse, and you would not see him. He could call you, and you would not hear him, because your mind is talking. You can't hear a Buddha when your mind's talking. How? And if you heard him, you'd say, "What did he say?" But you see, by the time you'd said that, you'd passed him. We're back where we began. The formless, the further you go within, the deeper you go within, the closer to the formless things become. Until that moment when there is nothing there but the formless, nothing there but what they have called the void, what they call the no mind, what they call the emptiness. And instead of being empty, it is absolutely filled, but in a totally new way. As long as you are attached to form in any way at all, you are going to be afraid of the formless. And it is only through the formless that you meet your true self, because your true self has no form. It has no shape. It has no taste. It has no smell. It is formless. So to whatever extent you can, I would ask you to drop away from attachment to form. This is why I began my instruction to you light years ago. And I said, please, instead of paying attention to the substance of things, please pay attention to the space around it. Because those of you who have done that have learned something very interesting, which is that the space is what gives the meaning and upholds the form. The formless is what defines the form. Don't you see? It is that space around the form that defines this form. You've got it the other way around. It is the space around that defines that form. And you're looking at the wrong thing. If you're looking at the form, it is changeable. Please ignore it. and be aware of the space that surrounds it, which does not change, which is ever present, and which is alive, and which you have forgotten all about. You're looking at the wrong thing. Yes.
As I listen to you, I wonder if this is what has been my experience in meditation, because it has changed recently. And as I would describe it, it is so silent and so still that it is very hard to be there. And I watch myself do anything to move it,
yes,
to put movement into it. Not that I'm afraid, but it's just so out of my experience.
Is it boring at all?
Yes.
Wonderful. I'm delighted. Yes, good. The question is that the woman has reached this spot in her meditation where everything is so utterly quiet and still that she finds herself bored in its presence, and finds herself trying to make movements toward some kind of activity of any kind.
I watch myself, yes, knowing that the activity that I do is meaningless, and yet I am making that choice rather than stay in that nothingness.
Yes. All right. Now, all I can say to you as you sit in your nothingness is this. Just as we began our question with this gentleman, we must now speak to you. It's the same process. You have a choice to make. You can either believe all of the avatars that have spoken that if you stay in there and relentlessly pursue this boring business, that something is going to snap and you're going to understand. You're going to be freed. You're going to be yourself. Or you can stand up and say, that is too boring, I am going to re-enter the stream of life and the stream of activities and so forth. It is a choice. And every one of you must come to this point. Many of you have been at this point and have made the other choice.
I'm well aware of the choice. And I'm aware of a fear that I will come to a future place and be regretful if I choose to pursue this silence, that it will not be fulfilling as what I have now.
Precisely. All right. Very good.
And that I will regret.
Excellent. Yes. Excellent. She says that she feels this fear in her rise up, that if she continues to pursue this silence, that at the end of the road there's nothing but empty silence.
Also that I will have to let go of this in order to reach that, and that I will be left empty, nothing.
There is no hope for you except to go on. You can read, you can feel, and you can desire, but in the last, it takes an act of courage, and I have never fooled you about that, have I? From the first time we met, I asked all of you, do you have the courage? And this is where the courage comes in. What if this woman loses her husband? What if she loses her children? What if she loses everything and is sitting there in a dumpy shack in the middle of nothing but the silence, and it is nothing? Don't you understand that this is the fear? That all that has been said is nothing more than more of the illusion that you have lived with all of your life. Everyone tells you, get yourself a man, you'll be happy. Oh, well, that doesn't work so well. Well, have some children, you'll be happy. Well, then they turn out not so well. Well, then get yourself another husband, you'll be happier. It goes on endlessly, endlessly. And every time, if you're paying attention, it turns to ashes. And you must not underestimate your own response to life, all of you. Because don't you see that now that same response pattern enters into your spiritual quest? You say every other promise has been ashes. Why should this one be any different? And I cannot say anything. I cannot say anything to you at all except you've got to go on. And those of you that don't go on, fine, don't go on. This is not, you know, a race. It's simply either you go or you don't go. But I understand exactly what you are saying. And I address the problem with all the sincerity of my being. And first, I salute you for having gone this far, because most do not. And second, I understand deeply what you're saying. And the only thing I can tell you is, to whatever extent that you believe in me, or anyone else who you feel has the power of understanding, I tell you that that which you seek is there to be found. That which you seek is so much more than that which you have, that on achieving it, you will wonder that you ever doubted for a moment. But that is telling you about a future state. And I understand your anxiety, and I love you. And I love you. Just walk on. Because the thing that you have not yet observed is that you have no choice. You tell me you have a choice. And I ask you, between now and the next time I return here, look into your being and find out, do you really have a choice? Or are you one of those lucky ones who has gone so far that they cannot turn back? Look and see. All right? You see, it is terrifying. I keep saying that to you, and I keep hearing people say, oh, but my life is wonderful. I just think God is wonderful. Everything is just wonderful. And I'm thinking, they are not talking about what I'm talking about. But she is talking about what I'm talking about. So, are there questions?
I hope I can express my question as much as I feel it. Basically, it's free will versus destiny. I've been hearing a lot about we create our own reality through our minds and through positive programming of the mind. Then I also hear, accept where you are, because this is where God has put you. And I go back and forth, and I can't figure out the balance between the two.
Would you like to rephrase the question?
Could you discuss the dichotomy of free will versus destiny?
I hope I can clarify this for you. If not, perhaps we could meet at another time. Please understand that you observe your life as one energy field called, your name is what?
Leslie.
One energy field moving through events in a linear manner. And this is how you observe yourself. And this is how everyone else observes you. You're not seeing, and they're not seeing. That is not the truth of what is happening. The truth of what is happening is this. If we could take as an example the white light of a crystal, you call it something else here,
a prism,
and through that prism, when the light goes through it, multitudinous colors play. One of those plays of colors is called Leslie. But because you are looking at separation instead of at unity, you see only Leslie and the life that she is undergoing. And you project that life into the future and into the past, and you say, yes, I understand. And your mind takes you down this path. All right. What happens when you get on the deep centering path is that you pull yourself from that little splinter of light and you pull yourself into the vast, back into the white prism of full awareness. Now look. The light is going through that prism, and all of those rays are projected out at once. Light does not go through the prism and just have one ray now and then recede and then another. Understood? It is a movement and they all projected. You say to me, I have lived this life, and then somebody says, well, you've lived past lives and you're going to live future lives and so on and so forth. All that they are saying is this, that they are looking at the separated lines of color. At the same time, please, I hope I'm following you. I mean, I hope you're following me, or I hope we're moving. At the same time that that one isolated ray of light is projected, there is something else in it that you might not observe, which is that the part of the white light is also there. The thing that you do not see with the naked eye is that there is a part of that one main white crystal light also present in that one offshoot of red. Do you understand? You are paying attention to the red, and I'm saying pay attention to the crystal white light. You say to me, what is creating my reality? And I say to you, if you are talking about the red, then you are creating that with your own mind. Do you hear? You are creating that. You are responsible. You can have good thoughts. You're going to have a good life. You can have bad thoughts. You'll have a bad life. And then you throw into the pot past lives. And so you have past lives indicating this life, oh, it gets to be a great game. Because you see, your red light has reflections from the light right next to it, which might be a different color. And the hues intermesh. And how are you going to say whether the light next to you has conditioned you or not? You see, it's all a blur. So it is true that you create your own reality and march through it with determination. But at the same time, my dear friend, and this is what I would like you to hold on to, surrounding that and ever mingling with that red light is the white clarity of what I call divine action, divine motion. And when you begin to take your awareness off of the red and immerse it into the presence of the whiteness of things, then at that stage, no longer are you aware of the fact that you make choices. And at that stage, you immerse yourself in a process, and this is important, that has always been going on, but that you have not been aware of. The process of your divine unfoldment has been going on all of the time, simultaneously with the life that you are living now. Do you understand? So both are true. But if you're looking at the red light and the red forms, no, those are yours. Create them as you will. Make devils or angels, I don't care. That's your business. And the reason I don't care is that they will die. You cannot breathe eternal life into those dead forms. They will die. But the wondrous crystal white light that surrounds and upholds that one splinter of red is eternal. And the only thing that conditions its movement comes from the one white source. And so both are true. God does not want you to live your life like a train wreck. Totally surrounding your activities, your choices, and your movements, there is another choice, and it's a choiceless choice, which means to let it all go. Just let it all go and get inside and start looking with the eye of the white crystal. Because when you see it from that perception, you know that you make no choices, that you create no images, that you project nothing, my friend. Do you understand? It's two things. There are two things going on in your so-called life. And you're paying attention to one of them. Have I made that at all clear? Do you understand? I'm just trying to tell you that, yes, you're responsible for the red. Yes, you're responsible for the creations of that red light. And the one next to you has an orange, and they intermesh, And you're both responsible. But so what? The reason I say so what is they cannot carry eternality in them. They will die. And you can create something ugly and it will die. And you can create something exquisite and it will die. But when you start merging back, ever backward, to what is already surrounding you of the whiteness of things, taking your attention off, and this is what she's saying. What the woman said prior to you is, when you take your attention off of the known, the form, the red, the life as you know it, you have to let go and fall back. And it's in that falling back process that you find yourself in the white light. But you have to fall. And what she knows and what is frightening her is that you have to let go of the red before you can fall into the white. You cannot take traces of the red with you. You have to be newly born. You cannot do it. And this is what is frightening, because you want to take some of the red and hang on to just one little thing. Just give me one little particle of this red to make me feel happy, my little security blanket, and I'll take it into the void. Just give me my little blanket. But the problem is you can't. And you know why? It is that very minute moment of red light that will stop you from falling. So both are true. To say that the divine wants chaos, pain, sorrow, and suffering is to make a statement that I consider absolutely unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. It is not in the divine's ability to project any kind of an idea like that, and therefore none of it could ever be from the divine. Please be very clear about that. When someone hurts you, that is not divine in action. That is ego in action. When harm and pain and suffering happen, that is not God's will, my friends. That is not God's will. That is your will. But whatsoever in your life that is eternal, never ceasing, continuously there, ever present, ever secure, ever exalted, whether it be love for a human or any other form, then know that is the divine. The changeless love. The changeless love. That is the divine. Do you understand? Have I been able to do that?
Well, is it true that if you experience what joy has experienced, and if you go into the void, you can still go about your tasks in this world, and still you will still be experiencing this sense of oneness that you have experienced?
Maybe, maybe not.
Yeah.
There are no answers. There are no answers. Some people see it and die. Out of sheer joy, they die. Enough of this. Goodbye. Finished. Others say, oh, well, I will stay in. I will be a Bodhisattva. I will stay. I will stay. There are no answers.
Then it doesn't make any difference.
Absolutely
really.
No difference at all. So no one thing. No one thing. If you fall into the void of knowingness, you won't care if your jobs get done. You simply won't care. And if they don't get done, they don't get done. Because you see, what you're caught up in, not you, but most people are caught up is in this wonderful ritual of what you're doing is so important. We have to save the world. We have to take care of this, and we have to take care of that, and it is all balderdash. It has no meaning. The fact remains that as one person falling into the void, you have done more for the totality of understanding than any possible action your hands could have performed. Understand this. Mind rules this planet, not action. Mind. You start with mind, and mind puts it into form, not otherwise. And so when mind is freed from limitation, boundless understanding, what a change takes place here. But it has to happen in mind first. You simply won't care. Let somebody else make the soup. Let somebody else cut the bread. Let somebody else serve the ice cream. But if it is your dharma, then you will cut the bread and you will make the soup and you will serve the ice cream and you will not care because there is no you there. And this is what I cannot talk about. There is no you there doing it. There's presence there. That is as far as I can extend. There is a presence. Concentrate on that word, will you? The presence. When you sit there in that voidness, what about presence? What about watcher? What about observer? See about that, will you? And then if we could have I'd like to have a talk with her the next time I come. Okay. Joy, please. Would you work on that? Would you work on that? Because in the moment of that nothingness, there is someone. Something's there.
You want me to concentrate on...
Who's there?
Aware of what?
Who's there? Who's bored? Who's afraid? Who's there? And then let's meet and see what's there. Somebody has to be there to be bored. Somebody has to be there to be afraid. Something is there, or there would be no recollection at all. Find out who is there. And you and I can take turns talking up there.
Isn't it true that the ego is the only thing that fears?
Of course.
If we were to come to that point where we would, you know, would be afraid to do something or not do something, well, isn't it the ego that is the thing of fears, and maybe that's making us more afraid, or what?
Wonderful question. All right.
Isn't it only the ego that is the source of the fear we experience?
Yes, but look. The problem with what we're discussing is that if you have identified with ego, which you will unless you have a deeply meditative stance within you, then when ego fears, you are going to say, I am afraid. The trick is to know that ego is not I. When you know that fearful, squirmy, wormy ego is not you, then the question must arise, if I am not ego, who am I? I know I am. The one thing you know, you cannot deny that you are. What you are changes all the time. If somebody smiles at you, you're a nice person. If somebody frowns at you, you're a bad person. If your children are successful, you're a good mother. If they're not successful, you're a bad mother. If you have a good job, you're a good worker. You see? Onward, onward. The world reflecting back who you are, always back, back, back. And it's all nonsense. That's not who you are at all. And the watcher knows that the face is changed constantly and finally realizes, I can't be all those things. How can I be? How can I on the one hand be this and then be this? Finally, you start to wake up. Do you understand? You look at this proliferation of faces and responses and you say, no, now wait a minute. This is very confusing. I either am a good person or I'm not. And when you start getting the feeling that all of this outside world is telling you what you are, and you are getting confused by it, and then finally you just get disgusted by it because you know that you can make no real form of yourself from that substance. Can you imagine what you would look like if you took all of the opinions of all of the people and glued them all together and said, this is me? What would you look like? What would you look like? Can you conceive of it? a little of your wife, a little of your boss, a little of this, a little of that, or your dog and your friends and the neighbors, and smush them all together and say, this is me. But that is what you've done. And you wonder why you get schizophrenic when you look at this? How could you possibly not? How can you believe in that kind of an object? How can you have any belief and continued allegiance and feeling good about yourself when that's what you see? The trick is not to go through psychoanalysis unless you have a great deal of money and would like to do it. The trick is to say, everything out there is reflecting back, and that's what I'm seeing, and I'm calling it, what is your name? When you see what you've done, the first thing is, don't just believe me. Experiment. Who are you? What do you see yourself as? And just draw this figure. Watch how you build on it day after day, layer after layer, letting the outer build on you and make you something. Make you something. Now you've got a new face and a bad face and so forth. Watch. And watch how you respond to that. One day you feel fine, the next day you feel down, the next day you feel, this and that, and all this interplay. And all of it is, you're just making this all up in the big figure. When you finally say, now wait a minute, wait a minute. I don't feel that that's what I am. Doesn't it ever occur to you when somebody says something outrageous about you to say, no, I'm not. I'm not like that. I'm not like that. And a part of you knows you're not like that. And the other wonderful thing that I love to hear you say is, I'm worth more than that. And that's what I want to hear. You are worth more than that. And when you awaken in whatever way your own life allows by watching, then there comes a wondrous separation. And you see that there is all of that out there. And that's all of the ego made up of all of these wonderful opinions, blah, right here. But there is something watching. There is something other. And that is where the ego loses its power, when you have shifted your view from the ego structure to the wondrous silence within. And that's why her victory will come only through more silence and not through more action. And that is the only thing I can ever say. And fear only dies when it just wears out. And it wears out because you keep acknowledging its presence, never deny it, but simply saying, I will go within. And when you go within and start building the power of that presence, more and more building it in whatever way is meaningful, then you will find that there is the presence, and then there is a seeming other, and then the other becomes the shadow, because it is a shadow. The ego is a shadow. It has no reality. It has no substance. What all of these other people think of you is absolutely unimportant. Absolutely unimportant what anyone in the universe thinks of you. Because it's only thought. And thought changes just like that. I am not surprised that there is mental illness on your planet. I am only surprised there isn't more of it. When you try and live your life feeling good about your own life based on what other people think of you, daily changing, daily having to placate, daily having to submit, daily, in order to feel wondrous, I think it is a wonder that you stay as sane as you do. That is not where you get the feeling of who you are. Life flows perfectly now. The white light surrounding the crystal red flows now. It does not have to be created. It is there. Just look for it. Just look for it. And you will find it. And that is the only promise I have for you. Look and you will find. Look and you will find. Well, I've gone on long enough. I thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Bartholomew.